Hello, and welcome to another broadcast of Youth Arts Underground. I'm Riley, your host, and I'm joined by my co-hosts...
Victoria.
And Courtney.
And today we are joined by The Balconies out of Toronto.
Hello.
Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, my name's Jackie, and I sing and play guitar in the band.
Hi, I'm Steve, and I play the bass.
My name's Liam, and I play the drums.
Cool. Start off with, I guess, just tell us about your band and what you do and what's going on.
Yeah, so we got started actually in Ottawa, which is the capital in Canada. And we met Liam, Steve and I are siblings, by the way. We met Liam at the University of Ottawa when we were studying music. And yeah, we got together in, early 2009? I guess that sounds about right. 2008. Wow. Yeah, it's been almost 5 years. And yeah, we put out a full-length record in 2009. It was self-titled. And recently in February of this year, we released an EP called Kill Count, which is what you have right there. And the single off that's called Kill Count, which we also put a video out for. So since then, things have slowly been gaining momentum and we've been touring a lot in the States. And we're really excited to be here for the first time in LA. It's very exciting.
We're glad to have you on too.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
What about you two guys? Tell us about yourselves.
Well, yeah, so like Jackie was saying, we met at... University of Ottawa studying music, and we were in a classical music program there. So Liam, our drummer, is actually a classical guitarist. I studied double bass, like playing in orchestra, and Jackie played viola. So we come from an eclectic music background.
Yeah, there's sort of a common ground that we had between the three of us, which was that we had all been studying kind of classical music since we were little kids, but also playing in rock bands all throughout high school and junior, like whatever you call it here, junior high school, grade 7-8. So, you know, when you're in a classical music program, there aren't too many other people studying classical music that also play in rock bands. So it worked out really well. We kind of all had similar musical interests and decided that when we were leaving university that, you know, we might as well start this band and go do all this rigorous touring and playing loud, sweaty rock shows while we're still young, and then we can be classical musicians later, right?
Hey, that works. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the inspiration behind your music, your general, like, why you got into rock specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I had two older sisters growing up who, you know, introduced me to all the classic rock and, like, alternative music in the early 90s, and so, I mean, I was always really inspired by you know, obviously like Jimi Hendrix and The Cream and Led Zeppelin and stuff growing up when you're like 8, 9, 10 years old. Like that kind of music's really easy to think is really cool. But then, I mean, around 93, 94, my sisters started getting into, you know, Nirvana and Rage Against the Machine and kind of like more contemporary, darker music at the time. And I was really into that stuff when it was coming out just because of the kind of, you know, dark energy and like the huge crowds they were playing to and just the whole thing.
It had that sort of edge that you didn't really have before that.
Yeah, yeah. And then from there, I you know, my friends in junior high school, we started skateboarding, getting into punk rock and hardcore and stuff, and started going to those kinds of shows where I really thought it was cool that, you know, as an audience member, you can get right up close to the bands in these little tiny clubs and you feel like you're really part of something instead of being at a huge, you know, Green Day show where you're, you know, 100 feet away in some huge stadium where you can't even, you know, really hear the sound of the amps.
Or see them.
You know,
it's I think that is one of the big appeals of indie rock is it's a lot more hands-on.
It's far more intimate. And I feel like, at least for me, as even just a listener, you feel like you're a part of something and you feel this, like, this organic connection to the music that you're listening to. So I think that's really special. And we really thrive on that. We really want people to feel like, you know, they discovered us themselves kind of thing. So
like, it's like you want this connection to your audience. That's
absolutely. And we think it's really important to build relationships with our listeners and people who are coming out to our shows. Like after we play, we don't go up in the green room and hide. We hang out and we sell our merch and we like talking to people and we love doing stuff like this. So it's very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the sort of driving force between our behind our live show is this sort of, you know, as a three-piece band, there's sort of like a brute energy in each instrument. Like there's a really loud bass, a really loud guitar, and really loud drums, and that's kind of like making up. I mean, a lot of bands, to make a fuller sound, will have, you know, a keyboard player, a second guitar player, or like backing tracks or something like that, and instead we just do it all, you know, as a straight up three piece, but everything is just super loud and huge sounding. Like right now we're on a tour where Jackie's playing through, you know, 2 4-12 guitar cabinets, and Steve's playing through 2 8-10 bass cabs, and it's just like this huge,
it's a wall sound of sound.
Like, you like that? You yeah. like that?
People just see three people, and they're not expecting like this punch in the face with sound. But
yeah, so yeah. I mean, that's really what our band's all about. And in our first self-produced, self-titled, self-released record that we did in 2009, you know, we were just recording it in our apartments. Like we had to kind of tone down the sounds that were being made to go on that record because we couldn't afford having a, you know, producer and going into a studio at the time. So that first record, when it came out, people would hear it and it just sounded like, you know, pop songs, and then they'd come see us live and we'd blow their heads off. And you know, it was a kind of a disconnect between the album and the live show. So now with this new EP that we did with John Drew in Toronto, he's, you know, famous at least in Canada for recording punk bands and hard rock bands and kind of just capturing that live energy. So that's what, you know, mm-hmm. we're really happy with the way this EP turned out.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I think what really defines our sound is because we come from alternative and rock and punk backgrounds, we have that live chaotic energy that a lot of those bands have. But also we're a pop band. We love hooks, and I know, at least for me, like I grew up listening to Michael Jackson and Tina Turner, and I love bubblegum pop. I think it's awesome, just because it's so memorable. It gets stuck in your head for a reason, and I think that in itself is really special. So the fact that we're kind of colliding and combining these two aesthetics, I think that's what really makes the Balconies. Yeah.
Nice. One thing I'd like to ask is, because I think the one thing behind rock and punk specifically that I think is always the most interesting is how the band members are always, you know, sort of, they always have their own angles, their own edges, their own personalities. Mm-hmm. What would you say each of you puts into your songs, like as an individual? Like, what did you say is your unique creative input?
That's a really awesome question.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have an idea for everybody.
Well, then Liam, what
can all argue.
Liam's the observer. He's very analytical.
Like, Jackie is really fantastic at, you know, just having, like, she comes up with a lot of really good hooks, you know, and, like, chorus ideas and really great melodies, and she's got the fantastic voice and is able to really wail on the guitar. And then, you know, when we were first writing songs, and kind of the way that it works out is, like, I do a lot of just kind of, obviously as the drummer, like kind of thinking of how the rhythm's going to be interesting and how it's going to groove and really have punchy, you know, stuff happening underneath that'll draw people in. And Steve's got sort of a really cerebral approach and thinks of, you know, really cool harmony voicings and writes awesome lyrics that are poetic. And Steve writes, like, we all write songs, but in a very different way. Like, Steve will come up with an entire song that is basically finished, but, you know, just with the bass line and the lyrics, whereas I'll write songs, but, you know, I usually leave lyrics for last, and I'm coming from, you know, rhythm, and then I'll think of harmony, and then have all the hooks and the lyrics, like, last, kind of to just build on top of that, whereas Jackie kind of comes from the hooks and the choruses first, and then we usually...
I normally struggle with writing verses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, okay, I got a really cool riff, and I have a chorus, but... let's see if we can figure something out. And usually that becomes a song. So
I think that really works out to be a sort of perfect mixture of input and personalities, because if you think about what makes an interesting song, it's really a combination of all those things. And I think we're lucky in that, you know, we don't have a fourth member for the reason of then, because that would make it really hard to sort things out if it's two people against two people thinking, debating about an idea, then you can't really win. Whereas,
so you like having the tiebreaker guy.
Yeah, with a three-piece band, you know, the scheduling's a lot easier. deciding on what you're going to keep is a lot easier just because, you know, it's always two against one. Or
not always. Usually people, we're on the same page.
Well, yeah, but usually sometimes, you know, there's the matter of the two people having to sort of convince the other person that it's going to be better this way, you know.
Mm.
And then, that always works out for the best with us.
But yeah, we're pretty fortunate. I think we're all very much on the same page as far as direction goes and how we envision the band evolving. I think we all have the same goals in mind, so it works out pretty perfectly. I think we make a really great team.
Nice. Another, and I think the last question before we go for a short break, since this is Youth Arts Underground, we always have to get back to youth.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd ask you, if you could go back to when you were 16, what would you tell yourself? What advice would you give yourself?
It's really interesting. I don't think I regret anything at all. Maybe I'd tell myself to not get as discouraged. I know when I was younger, I would get very easily discouraged. And if I ever heard negative feedback, I'd take it the wrong way. So I think now I would say, you know, criticism is probably the best thing ever. And that's the point of being young, is like being like a sponge and taking as much in and growing as much as you can. And, yeah, just listening to your elders, basically. I was very stubborn, I guess, when I was younger, and it was my way or no way, right?
Yeah. So, but at the same time, you know, I in retrospect, I think about having confidence in your own voice and not feeling like you need to take on influences that don't seem part of you. So,
yeah. Mm. But that's what I mean by, like, not a sponge. Probably that's not the right word. But I just
it's a hard situation.
Open to it. Being open to constructive criticism is what I was trying to articulate.
I think that's the problem with criticism in general. It's like, it's important. Everybody knows it's important. Yeah. But if you take all of it, it's like you're never going to be able to get and do something. Because you're always going to be thinking about what you're doing wrong.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think Steve and I we're pretty fortunate because we come from a fairly musical family. And they were always very supportive of us being creative and learning new instruments, and they're always very open to us wanting to have our own voice. And, you know, they supported our early bands entirely. They would help pay for recordings and, you know, help get us singing lessons, guitar lessons, violin lessons and whatnot. So I think we're pretty lucky that we came from such amazing musical backgrounds. So
I think having a strong support base is one of the most helpful things you can have growing up as an artist.
The best thing. And the fact that I'm in a band with my brother, I think that's really special. Yeah. Don't get homesick.
So we're going to go on to Kill Count.
Cool.
And when we're going to come back after that and talk some more.
Awesome.
Great.
Out of here, why don't you come?
And we're back. Happy birthday, Liam.
Yay.
Yeah.
Birthday boy.
You should
boy.
Have told us on air. That was a wonderful moment we missed.
He gets shy.
Just a regular day.
So, okay, you were telling me about how you played yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And you're exhausted. When are you playing next? When's your next
game? We are playing tonight at Takes. We're playing at midnight tonight.
Nice.
For Culture Collide Festival again. That's sponsored by Filter Magazine, so it's pretty cool that they want to help us out and bring us over here. Yep, very happy.
All right. I don't know. I guess my personal interest is always how artists see how their art is being viewed, how it's being treated,
mm-hmm.
because I always get a different answer, you know. How do you guys feel about the state of, you know, rock and punk? How do you feel, like, how it's viewed by society and, you know, how seriously it's taken or not?
Well, it depends. Like, I have comments when I'm meeting people and I tell them in a rock band, and I get comments like, oh, that's a dying art. And I'm like, I guess, like, it's more of a niche than it used to be. It's not the pervasive market anymore, but it's still going strong, and there's always new groups coming out and new songs being released. So I don't see it being dying, you know?
Because
this is a shift away, but...
That's the interesting thing, you know, talking to somebody who's trained in classical music, who goes into rock,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
because I think there is that sort of perception that, like, you know, oh, rock is... It's dead. It's, like, so, you know, last decade, and it's, like...
Well, that's like saying, like, classical music's dead. It's, like...
It's the same thing.
People... There are always new composers. There is the... orchestras. It's specific markets, right? And obviously popular music, I don't mean pop music, but popular radio music obviously goes in waves, and there's trends, and that's
always
obviously expected. And it's very clear that, you know, dance music and dubstep's huge right now. But I think that's okay. And I think as long as you stick to your guns and stick to what you feel feels natural to you, that's going to shine through, and people are going to respect that. And hopefully, you know, that will become the new trend.
Yeah. And also, you know, I don't think any individual likes one particular style, not exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you're into dubstep, that doesn't mean you're not going to like rock bands.
Yeah, exactly.
And, so that's something that's new because of the internet and radio. So
things are so accessible now. I think people are definitely more open to different kinds of music. And like you were saying with YouTube, it's so easy to explore new things and discover new bands and new markets.
I do think that is something we should touch on only in brief. What is your reaction to how open things are in these days, and, you know, how there's this huge influx of new content? How it's like, you know, it's an odd example to bring up, but it's like the whole Gangnam style thing. It's like.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you laugh at it, but it's like it has more views than the population of the United States.
Right.
And like when would that have happened? Just that it happened alone
is
a sign of how crazily open things are now.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting.
Do you have any thoughts on it, or?
I have many thoughts, but they're all confused.
I think that's part of it. It is confusing.
It blows my mind. Like, the other day I was on YouTube and I was looking at Justin Bieber video, and he had like 780 million views. And I'm like, who are these people? Like, like, how is that even possible? And then you see like a Beyonce video, and it's like, oh, this one only has 100 million views.
And that's the other thing. It makes you sort of callous.
Exactly.
It's like,
so ridiculous.
You see a 780 million. It's like, it's only two United States of America.
Yeah, but then you see like an amazing rock band, and you're like, how come this only has, you know, 20,000 hits? Why? It's like a great video. How come these people aren't, you know, going viral? It's,
you know,
it's a very funny thing. It's like, and how do you go viral?
That's another question.
So like Steve was saying, it's just confusion.
Yeah. I think there's a real... I don't know if I'd call it a demand, but like an excitement over things that are really sort of ridiculous right now. Like, if you think of the whole Rebecca Black sensation, like the reason that got passed around was because people, I'm sure, were just thinking like, oh my God, you're not going to believe this. And it's like kind of an excitement about finding something that you never really thought was possible to be so whatever it is, you know? And I think about, you know, like Justin Bieber's like first big hit, like it was kind of cheesy and it got so big. I mean, it was, you know, pretty cheesy, but and it got so big just being like this really simple song. And mm-hmm. I think that sort of the fact that it got big was what made it so big. You know what I mean? Like
they sort of reach critical mass.
Yeah.
They're like stars, like literally. It's they like, sort of draw in more mass just because of how big they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the way, you know, for, you know, like Paris Hilton being famous for being famous, you know, it's like the fact that something is getting a lot of attention gets a lot more attention, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of that initial, you know, spark that nobody really knows where that's going to come from or how it's going to come up. But as soon as somebody sees a sort of like, whoa, I've never thought that was possible before to have something like this get so huge, then, you know, people just really tend to jump on that. And, you know, I think everybody's guilty of that. You know, everybody watches these videos that, you know.
Well, it's not like it's not really a guilt thing. It's just sort of a byproduct of how, it's almost like distribution and like social networking have merged into this one entity.
It's true.
So it's like if you talk with people, you're also helping distribute material.
Yeah.
Which it's so crazy when you think of it like that.
It's how people talk now to you. Yeah. People are like, oh, did you see that video of that like baby monkey painting a picture of an elephant? And like,
well, that's another really great example.
It's, like, it's not just music. It's everything. Or like, do you see those elephants painting self-portraits in Thailand?
I did see that.
You know, I did see that too.
So did I. I saw it before it was popular.
I think it's just become a part of society now where we want this, like, I don't know if it's a shock factor, but just... I don't know if you guys can help me out here.
Sensation.
These overnight.
But that's the thing. It's like, it really isn't YouTube just music. And I think people don't always see, like, people think of the music thing as being a separate entity, but it really is just, like, all of pop culture now is kind of happening, like, across the board the same way. Like, things are getting really popular just by, you know, becoming really popular, you know, for no really apparent reason except for the fact that, you know, some there's these things like the elephants painting on, you know, paper with their trunks that people just think is, wow, that's really cool. I want to share that with my friends because it's really bizarre. Like, you know, it's
like the old Nickelodeon type thing. So like the really early movie days where it's like it was essentially just it was like a traveling, you know, freak show.
Yeah.
Only you didn't need freaks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You just recorded the freaks and that was your freak show. It's almost like it's sort of this endless search for novelty.
And you get lost in it too, because then it suggests other videos and you're like, okay, and I just wasted 4 hours on the internet looking at ridiculous videos of
like the video of the two twin babies who are like talking to each other. You seen that one? Like just stuff like that, that, you know, the babies have this weird way of communicating with each other. And people watch that and just think,
it's so hilarious.
I never thought of that before. I never thought that existed. And it just gets passed around.
I do think that something I do want to touch on is that the effect of that wide-scale communication on music in specific. Because, I don't know, this is just a personal, you know, observation. But it's almost like because everything is so generalized, everything can be broadcast anywhere. And everything that's successful is the thing that can be sold anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think there's a difference between, you know, commercial success and artistic respect success, right?
Yes.
And it's like, you know, as a rock band, we're still striving for, you know, we want people to respect us as artists and take us seriously as musicians. And that, I think growing that way takes a lot longer. If you think of, you know, a band like Wilco or whatever, you know, taking like 10 years or the Black Keys, like having a really long kind of, you know, track before they really get huge, you know, and making a lot of records. And then by the time people sort of start catching on, then you've got a lot of material to choose from. And I think that's really the way that we're hoping to go. Like, we don't plan on ever stopping making music. And, you know, most of the acts that do just explode into you know, very sudden commercial success, it's very, you know, often that people don't really respect it as, you know, good art or respect it, take it seriously, you know. And I mean, like,
not even that. I think also it could be like a longevity thing. Mm-hmm. We want to have a long career, and there's so often, you know, one hit wonders, and people, it's easy to disappear. And so for us, it's like, well, if, you know, slow and steady.
Content.
Exactly. So for us, we really like focusing on what we're doing and growing organically and building a true fan base, not just overnight, you know, magical sensation on YouTube. And obviously, if that were to happen, I wouldn't be entirely opposed to it, because it's like, wow, all these people know who we are now. And that's awesome.
It's,
but,
you know, it's income.
I know as an artist, for me personally, I want to grow very slowly and develop and learn as much as I can about like the industry and continue networking with new people. So I think that's what we're all about.
I think there's a really funny sort of attitude, especially in North America. I don't know about other parts of the world because I haven't been overseas ever in my life. So I'll find out hopefully. But there's the whole idea of, you know, a career and, you know, financial security and retirement and all that stuff. And when a lot of people talk to us as musicians, they say, well, you know, like, you don't really have a steady job. How are you going to support yourself when you get older? How are you going to retire? And, you know, what we say is just, that's the best thing about being an artist and doing something that you love to do, is that you don't need to retire. You know, like, we're going to be playing music for our entire lives. And that is something we've always known since we were kids. And, you know, like, playing music isn't really, it's not a tough job. It's not something that you want to retire from. It's not like having an office job where you, you know, work 9 to 5 for 40 years and then retire and then you're old and tired and you have a lot of money, but you can't do what you wanted to do when you were young. So I think there's sort of this amazing thing about being an artist that although throughout your life you may not be making that much money, like, we can still get by, we can support ourselves, we have apartments, like, we have all we really need. And we're able to travel, which is amazing. And it's just kind of, we see it as we don't ever need to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you just keep doing it and, you know, grow slowly. And that's kind of all we need, I think.
It's that, I think that's always important. That's, I think, the best advice for anybody who's growing up is do what you enjoy doing, because you're going to be doing it for a long time.
Yeah. Have fun. That's what life is about, right? It's like, obviously there's responsibility with everything, but what life is about is enjoying it and doing what you love and like feeling fulfilled. And that's why we're doing music, because when we create music together and when we, you know, get to talk to people who are at our shows, it's like, wow, there's like this like amazing recycling of energy, and it's really amazing. And I feel really fortunate that I am a part of it. So yeah,
I do think that's, well, it's evident by the fact that, you know, you seem very conscious of respect. That's another, you know, repeating thing I see from artists is, you know, the money issue is always an issue. You know, you can just take that out of the equation. Like, it's always going to be an issue.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing that interests me is that artists are selling something that isn't like I said before, it's not like food. It's not like housing. It's an intangible. But at the same time, there is that need for at least some of it by someone. But I don't know. It feels like there's this sort of, there's always that, I don't know, that feeling, that need to feel like that verification, you know, just to know that you're doing something that's necessary. I feel like that's a common trend, is that need for, you know, self-verification.
I guess. Yeah.
I don't mean to be getting too philosophical here.
No, it's fine. No, I'm thinking. It's like when you put on the spot like that, it's a good point. Absolutely. I don't know. I'm very happy with what I'm doing. I don't need a verification from other people.
Well,
you know,
it's not like that. It's not as if you need some, it's not like I need someone to tell me I'm good. It's like it's like going out on a show and seeing 1,000 people in the crowd and being like, ah, oh, there are 1,000 people who care. You know, it's like that sort of feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. I see what you're saying, for sure. And it's pretty amazing. Like, last night we played to a really amazing crowd, and this was the first time we had ever been in the city, so we had no idea what to expect. And so I was like, wow, these people had no idea who we were, and they saw our name in the listing and came out, and they liked it. That's pretty profound. That's pretty amazing. And I think that just motivates us even more to keep doing what we're doing. But if one person approaches us and says, you know, we don't like what you're doing, that's not going to stop us.
Yeah,
you know, it's just like, okay, well, that's your opinion. It's
going to make you want to thrive more.
Music is like wine. You know, everyone has their own taste. So it's there's no right or wrong. I just think that everyone is entitled to their own opinion, and it's okay.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't think of anything. I can't disagree with that.
Yeah.
Some people would disagree.
some people would, and I think that's okay too.
Another thing with having a world in which you can get 780 whatever million views on something is there's always going to be someone who disagrees.
Exactly. Yeah.
There isn't a dislike button on YouTube after all.
Yeah, it's true.
Dislike. Yeah. I don't know. How about another break? Because I want to build up this discussion a bit more.
Pick our brains a little more.
Yeah. Because I like the way this is going.
Yeah.
So next we're going to play Tiger.
Yeah, let's do it.
And we'll be back. And we're back again. Hey.
Hey.
Hi.
So what's your band's name mean?
I'm just giggling about that. Seriously, do you want to know?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm curious.
you asked the question. You told me it's like everybody asked. Now I want to know the answer.
I'm feeding you questions now. It is basically, when we think of a balcony, there's nothing but really positive connotations with a balcony. You know, you can hang out on a balcony, relax, read a book, have a glass of wine or tea if you like. Or you can have a party on a balcony. So
has
I feel
to be a
like
big balcony, though.
Yeah, it has to be a big
make
one.
Make sure it's well supported.
Big patio balcony.
You can like look out onto the cityscape from your balcony or stargaze.
Yeah. So. And I feel like that kind of represents our music. It's really nice to listen to at home and pick up on subtle complexities that we might throw in there. But also, you know, live, we want people to kind of get lost in the chaos and the party scene and dance with us and just have a good time. So I think it really, although it's a simple word, it really represents what our music is like.
Nice.
Yeah.
Here's a question that Ollie seems to do. Can you give us, tell us about some of your, do you have any outstanding experiences working, you know, as a band? Any horrible experiences, good experiences?
Well, touring in Canada alone is an experience for sure. Because winter is a very long season in Canada, that's when touring gets a little troublesome. It gets hard. It's really cold. It's, you know, your car won't start. It'll be like minus 30 degrees Celsius. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but it's cold.
We're getting up against cultural boundaries.
Yeah.
But it's also a motivational factor for Canadian bands because there's no international acts touring through Canada in the winter because it's scary.
It's too scary for
America. So it's kind of an opportunity for the Canadian bands to say, okay, well, we can do it.
So it's like only Russia can live in Russia.
Yeah.
Only Canadians can conquer Canada.
Yeah. And it's very long distances between the major cities. So it can be very challenging, you know, and the terrain just changes drastically. So there's been times where we have sunshiny weather and we
have
to next.
You're telling me you're having trouble with cars not starting minus 30. You have to tell me about what actually happened when that happened.
Oh, well, we were in Halifax. Do you want to go into the story?
Sure.
Okay. So we were in Halifax, the East Coast, the Maritimes in Canada. And it's a beautiful city, but it was dead of winter. It was February. And we had this really old van from the 80s. It was like late 80s van. It was a Starcraft. It was 98. Oh, I don't know. It seemed that even older. but yeah, it was definitely on its last few limbs. And we were parked outside the venue and it didn't start. And I think it's because we left a light on in the van.
No, it was nothing related to anything we did. It's the starter went out, but it was the last date of a tour that we had, and we had a long drive afterwards. And we were just tired and getting irritable.
Yeah.
We waited for a tow truck for hours, and then when it finally arrived, we thought it was our battery at the time, so we got a boost. We're good to go. We drive back to the apartment we were staying, and then after unloading our gear and turning off the car, we tried to turn it back on to start it, and it didn't start again. So we're like stopped in the middle of the road. Our van's just sitting there.
In the middle of the road, literally. And it was a Saturday night, and Sunday, all the mechanics are off. So we were stranded in Halifax for an extra day in the middle of winter.
And we're dead
super
broke.
Super broke. I think we had $10 each to our name. And so
what did you survive on?
Well, we went to the movies and we jumped into another theater after our movie finished because we had nothing to do. And so we're like, okay, well, let's sneak into another movie to waste some time. And then we ended up loitering in a cafe with like our tea, and we're just sipping on this tea as slowly as we can so we can hang out there longer. But yeah, that was a definite experience. But touring in Canada isn't always that insane. It's a beautiful country and the drives are gorgeous when you're not in a blizzard. We've had some really wonderful tours in Canada, and we're after LA actually, we're doing a 6-week cross Canada tour.
What's your best memory?
Best memory
working as musicians?
so far for me, it's been South by Southwest when we went to Austin, Texas. That was an amazing festival. It's just the streets are packed. The food is amazing. Every single restaurant, cafe, bar, club is just the bands blaring out of the windows. And I don't know if that paints enough of a picture for you, but it's phenomenal. It's just like a huge street party and everyone is in a great mood. The weather's amazing. It's not too hot. And I've never experienced anything like that before. And I think it's definitely one of the most memorable things. For sure.
I think for me, it's shooting music videos. We have one that for our Kill Count song that was just such a fun time shooting because there's live wrestling involved in the video. So it's pretty neat, like luchador wrestling.
You would not believe me, but I have experience with music videos involving luchador wrestling.
Oh, really?
Oh, no way.
Yeah, totally.
That's awesome. That's so fun.
Small world.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to whisper it like it's the name of the devil. Anyway, continuing on.
But we also just shot a new music video for a song that's going to come out in this next month, which was extremely fun. It's like a day at an amusement park, basically, in the fun level.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I don't know if we're allowed to give it away, but it has a zombie theme to it. And I think, you know, with The Walking Dead, like we're huge fan of that show and huge fans of that show, should I say. And I think that definitely inspired us to go with it, especially Halloween coming up and everything. We figured it'd be a cool way to introduce this song to the world.
That's actually something I'd like to hear. Do you have any, what are your personal, like, you know, what are your personal likes? What are your personal hobbies besides music? Like,
and zombies, you know, obviously.
And zombies.
I like reading about history and I like ridiculous kung fu movies, especially the obscure ones from the 80s. My favorite.
Which one's your favorite?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big Star Wars geek, and I love Star Trek. I'm a Trekkie, yeah.
Voyager or Deep Space Nine, you have 30 seconds
to answer. Oh, no. I know, I'm not going to make that decision.
Don't.
I also recently just bought the entire series of, why can't I think of it now? The books that I just bought.
Game of Thrones.
Yes. I started watching
like
that show.
Song of Ice and Fire, I think?
Yeah,
but I bought the first book, and yeah. I started watching the show, Game of Thrones. I was like, this is really cool. I'm not used to reading books like this. This will be interesting, but so far, so good. I'm really into it.
Guys, so many thoughts on modern television? It's like, I don't know.
You seem not impressed by it.
No, I love Game of Thrones, seriously.
Oh, okay.
I do. It's just, I'm interested to know what your thoughts on are in like modern media.
Yeah.
I love like 90% of the HBO series and the AMC series are great. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of garbage television programs as well, but TV's at its best state ever, I think.
Yeah.
Higher budgets and better actors and better scripts. So,
Have any guilty pleasures when it comes to TV?
No.
Like no. Something it's like, I'd watch this, but I wouldn't let anybody know I watch this.
I'm not ashamed of it. I watched the show Girls. I'm not sure if you've heard of that show.
Oh, I've heard of that show.
I think it's awesome. And it's like a younger generation of Sex and the City, but it's also more realistic. I think the script writing for that is awesome. And I think just as a girl, as a woman, I think it's really easy to relate to that show. Obviously, I wouldn't recommend it to a man, but I have had guy friends watch it and they said, you know, wow, this is actually really entertaining. And I think it's pretty witty. So I'm not ashamed of it, though. I also watched a show called Misfits. It's a show from the UK, and it's about these delinquent teenagers who are doing community service hours, and the storm comes, and all of a sudden they have these superpowers that reflect their personality. So there's this one guy who feels kind of invisible to the world, but then he actually is able to become invisible after the storm. So it's really neat because they're such dysfunctional kids and they fight so much, but they're very charming and their character development is just phenomenal and you get to know the characters.
And like being a British series, like the actors are very believable human beings. Like they're not all movie star handsome people, you know, so it's kind of an interesting element.
Yeah,
being teenagers, and
I think TV shows are becoming far more creative, and
I think it's almost better than a lot of the movies that are coming out, because you have more time to develop the character, just to develop the plot. And I love television now. I think it's great. Growing up, I never watched TV. And
our new favorite is Hell on Wheels, which is amazing. Never seen it. It's set in post-Civil War era United States, and they're building the railroad, and it's really neat. It's really corrupt politics, and
I also like Hell's Kitchen. I love cooking shows, and Chef Ramsay's just a riot. He's so funny.
Oh, don't tell me about Gordon Ramsay. Gordon Ramsay.
What about you, Liam? What's your poison?
I don't know. We Steve and I watched a lot of the same stuff. I'm watching Hell on Wheels right now. I'm also really into the comic book movies, all the Marvel movies. I'm really digging the Avengers and Captain America. They're just such great high entertainment value movies. I mean, I'm also into action movies.
Have you seen Dread yet?
Dread? No, I haven't.
No.
It's so cool.
Cool.
Sorry.
We watched Spider-Man on the plane.
Yeah, I never have enough time to watch all the movies I want, so I have this huge list of movies to catch up on. But that's probably a good thing, you know? It's better to be busy.
Means you're busy.
What's your favorite movie of all time, if you had to pick one?
Oh my gosh.
Enter the Dragon.
It's probably not my favorite movie of all time, but it's definitely one I quote all the time. It's Wayne's World. It's just such a cult classic.
Whoa!
I know, right? Party on. But yeah, I feel like I'm constantly quoting Wayne's World, and it has a great soundtrack, you know?
Yeah, one other one we quote all the time is Idiocracy.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's just that movie just gets funnier the more
you watch it.
I'm still waiting for the soundtrack to Ass to come out. It's gonna be amazing.
Yeah.
It was so great in the theaters.
Yeah.
That movie's good.
You were talking a little bit about games earlier. I just sort of interested to know what games you guys are into.
Diablo 3.
You play
I got really into Assassin's Creed was really fun because there was so much. It just looks so good, those games. It's been Crisis 2.
Crisis 2.
Arkham Asylum's cool. I haven't played the new one. But
Arkham City's kick ass, man.
I haven't played that yet. So.
I miss the old Nintendo 64 games. That's what I played. Diddy Kong Racing.
Diddy Kong Racing.
Mario World. Mario Tennis. Right?
Banjo-Kazooie.
GoldenEye. I got pretty good at GoldenEye. But I haven't played any modern video games. Yeah.
Let's not talk about Rareware. I don't know. I think video games are it's a cool thing to talk about because you know,
the graphics are unbelievable.
It's
now.
It's at the center of this weird it's in this transitional period, you know? Mm. That transitional period where you have one generation that grew up when it was Atari and it's a waste of time. Board games, nonsense.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the other generation that's oh man, this is cool. Look, here's a game about growing up in West Germany. And it's there's actual, you can do stuff with video games. It's an actual viable artistic tool.
It's a whole new world.
And at the same time, you have this huge group of people who is it's corrupting youth, and causing floods and fires. You know? I think the thing that gets me about that is it's happened to every new medium. You know,
mm-hmm.
From movies to rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
You ever had any experience with something like that? Somebody who's rock and roll.
I was denied an apartment because of it.
Oh, wow.
I had applied for an apartment. And we're not a metal band or we don't, we don't look like scary people. Not to say that metal bands are scary, but
you're not exactly a gore. No.
Yeah. I don't think I'm the most threatening looking person. But I had applied for an apartment recently and the woman Google searched me and saw that I was in a rock band. I guess she was trying to find my Facebook page or something. Because employers do that now. They'll Google search you and try to, dig into personal things, which I don't think matters. But yeah, I was denied an apartment because I was in a rock band. Prejudice, I'm telling you.
Yeah,
it's awful. It's everywhere. It's everywhere.
I think that's the dark side of the social networking thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because now everybody knows what you're up to. It's like now everybody has a record.
That's
has,
why they have you, a just, dossier you just need on. A secret name. That's all you need.
Go by an alias. That's what I say.
The one friction point for me is, are my grandparents don't quite understand? Like what do you mean you're not going to get more university studies? You're in a rock band? Like, what are you doing? And I'm just like, it's okay.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. You just have to smile and nod.
That's the easiest way, usually. Yeah. We're going to take another break. This time we're going to play Battle Royale.
Cool.
And we'll be back. And we're back. Something I want to go into, just because this is another thing that seems to vary wildly when I wouldn't even expect it among artists, is like, what's your view on stuff like profanity and stuff like that? Like, I know that seems like a stupid question, but...
I personally don't ever swear on stage. Is this what you're asking?
Like, well, no, it's because I don't think
never is accurate there.
Yeah,
I don't think never is accurate
swear on
there.
Stage, but I in private, I curse, and like a sailor.
It's something, a result though of being stuck in a van for many hours with the same people. You get very comfortable with each other, and it's kind of just a joke that we have that we swear more than we normally would.
But then you have to be careful in public. I personally like to watch my mouth when I'm around other people. I think it's a setting thing. When you're with your friends, it's one thing, but in professional settings, and at least for me, music settings, I would rather not use profanity.
Yeah. And as far as lyrics go, I think you can make other language choices to get your point across. You know, I know certain genres, they exhibit it much more than indie rock. You know, you don't see as much swearing in indie rock, but we don't have any swear words in our songs. Not because it's like a golden rule or anything, but just because we'd rather paint a picture with other words.
Yeah, I think my thing with profanity in music is that, like, those words, they tend to draw way more attention to themselves, and it kind of like takes, it kind of gives you a stamp on a song as like, oh, there was swearing in that song. And I think it's kind of like how the common practice period of theory, like, people didn't allow parallel fifths in music because it drew too much attention to the, you know, the way that the instruments were moving together, and everything had to sort of be written so that you would be paying attention to, you know, the, like, the words and the, you know, the lines rather than the harmony, because people thought that was too much, like, no power, like, essentially saying no power chords, but back in, you know, whatever, like, 1600s or 1700s. But with profanity, and it's like if you say a swear word in a song, it's like, whoa, it really spikes out for people. It's not just like listening to normal talking, because that's not what we're used to hearing. And I think in our music, like, we don't see it as necessary, because we want people to be paying attention to other things in our music. Mm-hmm. Like the lines and the hooks and just sort of like the overall vibe. And I think, profanity in music really changes the vibe of a song, right? Mm-hmm. So,
but I think also people are becoming a little more desensitized to swearing, especially with, like, a lot of hip-hop music. It's just it's in there. It's
that's everywhere. It's like
their
really
favorite adjectives, right? So how to
announce
and verbs.
It's very versatile.
Yeah, it is. It's
sentence enhancers is the word.
Yeah, but to each their own.
I think that's it. That's reasonable. Has there ever been a day where, a day is probably making it too easy, but has there been a day where it's just things haven't worked, you know, either in writing songs or playing a gig? Has there just been a day where everything just seemed to go just the wrong way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that happens to everyone in any setting, not just music. I think it's pretty expected that you're going to hit hard points. But especially with songwriting, I know for me, you know, just some days you just can't write a song. You just can't write a riff, and that's okay. It's part of the creative process. And I've now learned to work within those waves. And I know when I'm feeling especially creative one morning, and you really have to honor that. And you just have to be like, okay, I feel like I have a song that's ready to explode out of my face. So I need to allow myself that hour of time, that hour window. I won't get my laundry done or my groceries done, but I need to allow myself this time, and I end up feeling amazing afterwards, because it is an explosion. It's like, okay, this is gonna like burst out of me, and I need it to happen right now. But other days it's just like I'm forcing an explosion to happen, and it's just not explosion. It seems so dramatic.
We're total opposites, because I'm not that way at all. Like, it's not an explosion. It's very structured, and I like work at music every single day, you know. Mm-hmm. However, if it's 2 hours a day, even if I don't get as much work done certain days, it's like exercise work for me, and as long as I'm doing the work, I feel like I'm moving forward. Mm-hmm. So we're very different in that way.
And not to say that I don't play guitar every day, which I do. You know, I like learning other people's songs, because maybe, oh wow, that scale I never thought I could play that way, or wow, there's a new chord that I never thought I could,
you know, that's how you learn. It's like you broaden your
but specifically
base.
To my songwriting, I when I try to work on writing a song every day, it just doesn't happen. And I'm okay with it now because everyone writes differently. Like Steve, he's able to force himself to write a song, and it's just that's his flow, whereas mine's very different.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm.
When was the first time you guys decided, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to get into music. Like, what inspired that passion that you guys have?
I think it took time to develop. I didn't really know for sure until I finished high school that I was like, I knew beforehand that mm-hmm. I stopped taking math focuses and science focuses and taking more art courses and writing courses. But I didn't really know for sure that I was going to try and make a career out of it until later on. Or and even still, you know, everyone has bad days and mm-hmm. you doubt your path. But we're all very focused. But it happened later on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, it was Sesame Street. I was 4 years old. This is like my earliest memory. I was 4 years old and I saw this little girl playing violin on Sesame Street. And I was like, oh my God, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And for 3 years straight, I bugged my parents every single day to play violin. Aww. And like that was the moment where I was like, I have to do music. Like mm-hmm. this is like this like overwhelming, like tingly feeling in my body that is just, I'm going to say the word again, ready to explode out of me. And then my parents finally got me violin lessons, and that just kind of snowballed into me wanting to learn guitar, me finding my own voice and, mm-hmm. and songwriting. And yeah, since I was five, it was like, that needs to happen.
Yeah.
And the classical music kind of dominoed into rock music, and I always did both. So yeah.
All right. Best criticism you've ever received?
Well, we just finished working with a producer named Arnold Lanny, and that entire session was just all criticism, but in a really beneficial way. Like he was producing the song, so he's criticizing us and challenging us to get a better product from us. And I'm not going to be able to list off some exact points, but that working with a producer of that stature is it's all about criticism. mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I love working with producers. At least this was like our first professional production. It was really amazing because he had such an objective point of view. And it was really nice because he had never heard our band before. And then we introduced this song to him and there was no bias at all. It was just like, okay, this is what I'm hearing and this is how I feel. This bridge will lead into the chorus a little better. And all it was reversing two chords. It's something so simple, but I think that's what makes a producer so special is they fine tune the little things and just make the song, you know, a 10 instead of an 8. So.
I don't know. This seems a bit off base. But I think when you're talking about producers, I don't know, it's just like a personal thing. Or it's like, I think the one big issue that is facing almost every musician nowadays is distribution. Mm. It's the one thing that seems to be changing the most, and it seems to be, I don't know, it seems to be affecting everyone in different ways.
It's not so much distribution, I think it's just more people aren't buying music as much anymore.
I think that's part of it. But at the same time, you know, there is still a base for music. That wouldn't explain why entire, you know, record stores are going down. There's a reason they're going down.
Because people are buying more songs on iTunes and viewing it on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So, yeah, again, and also I feel like a lot of people want the singles. People will buy, like, the 99-cent songs because they want to make playlists for working out, going to school. And I'm also guilty of that. I'll download, like, that one song that I love by that artist. And I still buy records, but I'm buying vinyl instead if I'm buying the record. But, yeah, I think that's why a lot of record stores are suffering, and that's why they're trying to sell video games, why they're trying to sell movies, they're struggling. And I think it's just because the industry is severely shifting, and as a result, you know, labels are suffering, and bands have noticed a change. So that's why bands have to tour so much more, because that's how they make their living, by selling merchandise at their shows, by people buying tickets. So I think it's just something that as a modern band, we're going to have to get used to.
And do you have any specific thoughts on it? I mean, because it's a pretty big shift from how things have been going for the last, you know, good 60 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of scary because before, like, all the power was in within, like, the labels and within with the artists and in the record stores, right? Whereas and now there's...
Like, our big thought on it, like, for example, we have our merch table set up at shows. We're selling our CDs and our vinyl and shirts. We also just have free download cards. So if you just want to have our music, go ahead, you know. That way, a torrent site doesn't have to facilitate it. You can get it directly from us. It's high quality audio. You don't have to get some bad rendering of the audio. So our opinion is, you know, you're gonna find it one way or another. We'll just let you have it.
Mm-hmm. And we just hope that they will come to the show. It's like, if you want the music that bad, if you love it that much, then great. That's awesome. We'll see you next time, kind of thing.
Yeah. If they like the show and they wanted to get our music, but they don't have any money, it's okay. You know, you'll become a fan by being able to listen to songs at home. You'll come next time. Mm-hmm. You know.
I think it's a cool opinion. I think that's the one thing that does seem to stick is, you know. Everybody's trying to find ways, everybody in every industry is trying to find ways of preventing people. It's like, it's all about copyright management and stuff. And, yeah. You know, when you think of, I don't know, it's hard because I think it's understandable, but it is kind of, you know, it's not really a possible thing to do. It's like, you can't stop people from doing that.
It's like you got rid of Napster, okay, but then Kazaa came out and then... I don't know what other downloading websites there are now, but there's so many. And yeah, you're going to keep shutting those sites down, but more are going to pop up. It's not something you can fight. And I think it's really amazing. I think a great example of this is Radiohead. When they came out with In Rainbows, they had, you know, you could either download the record for free or it's donations. You choose how much you want to give us, how much you think this album is worth. And some people would pay $50 for it. And I think that was like the most brilliant idea. I thought it was really great because it's still encouraging people to pay for the music and support this band. But it's like, well, if you don't want to pay for it, you're still going to be listening to our music. And that's all we really care about.
I think that is the one thing that is the big, I think if anything, that's the plus is distribution costs are now much lower because you don't need to manufacture anything now.
Yeah.
And it puts a numerical value almost on your connection with your fans, which I think is a lot more important as bands are sort of, it's becoming a lot more, I don't mean to say small, it's becoming more localized, where it's about who you can actually interact with. And like, that's becoming the new currency, because it's that trust that ensures that you'll be successful. It's that trust between you and the consumer.
Yeah.
Which I think it's a positive change. Mm.
I feel like it allows a bit more power for the artists than with labels who own the masters of your music. And that's how things used to be, right? Whereas now I think it's allowing the artists to call the shots and say, okay, well, we're going to put our music up online for free download, or we're going to have these free download cards so people can have our songs available to them. So I think it's... I think it's really important, especially for a starting out band who can't necessarily get that distribution deal or be able to reach markets in Europe. You know, it's I think it's really great.
You know, have you, you know, as a band, you must interact with, you know, other bands.
Oh, yeah.
Has there been a band that you've met that, you know, has been in a tight spot that, you know, like they were down, that it's like they're sort of struggling?
I think every band we know is struggling.
Well, yeah.
I mean, right now we're on tour with a band called Big Sugar, and they were quite big in the 90s in Canada, and they were on hiatus for 10 years and just got back together and released a new album and are on tour again. I mean, they all have families, they support themselves, obviously they're by no means poor. But, you know, that's how they make their money. They have to tour. They can't just count on their record sales anymore, which is how things used to be. Mm. So they are away from their family. And so in a way, that is a struggle, right? They have to be playing all the small towns and playing all the big cities. They have to be touring, you know, maybe an extra 3 months in order to make the same money that they did before based on just a month of touring, for example. So maybe in that sense, that's a struggle. But they're like, well, we have to do what we got to do in order to make the money that we used to make, right? So, and they love doing it, so why not?
It's all about enjoying what you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's say about something a bit more lighthearted, because I'm talking about philosophy and people depressing things. Have you noticed any differences, any like major differences between, you know, the U.S. and Canada? Just because. Is there some sort of outsider's perspective or?
People dance more. It's so fun. Obviously it varies from city to city, but maybe it's just because we've toured Canada a lot more, and so now we know which cities are going to be more involved physically. But for example, in Toronto, people are involved on the inside. Like they're enjoying it, but they'll just do like a head nod and it's like, okay, they're loving it right now. Whereas, you know, we go to Halifax and people are dancing and like losing their minds and we're like, okay, that's how we know they're having a great time. So it definitely varies, but I find in the States, at least all the places we have played in the States, people really move here.
It's a little more open, a little more.
Yeah. And people are so chatty. I love it. Yeah. But touring here is a lot easier just because cities are a lot closer together. So therefore, gas prices go down. We're not traveling for 13 hours to get to the
city. Believe it or not, the gas is cheaper here.
Gas is cheaper, yeah.
That is the one thing we always forget that, yeah, gas is expensive, but it's also, it is a lot more expensive other places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. Britain. Yeah.
It's very expensive.
I'd be afraid of large cars in Britain.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a huge difference for us. It's like, wow, we can travel to the next city in an hour or...
In Hummers.
In Hummers. Let's just all get Hummers. We'll have a convoy, balconies convoy.
Is there anything you miss from Canada that you don't really feel here? Something about just... Not about the people or just about the location.
Sometimes things I'll say, people are like, what? What is that? I don't know what you're talking about. Like when I was in Texas, I said, where's your washroom? And they had no idea what that was. And then I said, bathroom? They said, oh, the restroom. So small differences like that.
I forgot that you don't rest in one.
Yeah, I'm like, well, I'm not sleeping there.
Just go inside. Like, yeah. It's what it's called. You can't persecute me.
So small things, or sometimes people comment on my accent, the way I say A's.
Yeah, people always...
Pasta versus pasta. I say pasta, right?
And they catch on quickly that we're from Canada. I'm like, how'd you know? Like, you said A, like said three A. times in your last sentence. I'm like, oh, okay, that's why.
Totally guilty.
Well, we say like, and honestly, A is better than like. Just saying that as a Californian.
Yeah, I think we say like as well. Anywhere you're from, you're gonna have little quirky things about it. But I think that's what makes you special, right? And I'm not ashamed of being from Canada, and I don't think. Anyone should be
ashamed of Canada.
No, but I'm very proud.
Any
to
comments
be Canadian.
On the recent maple syrup stealing?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
I'm proud that I'm Canadian, and I love being in America. I think it's an amazing country, and the more I learn about the people and different cities, I fall even more in love with it. So, yeah, I love the USA.
Can you really not get like fresh real maple syrup in America?
It's hard to. No.
I guess.
It's really hard.
That's so bizarre.
You have table syrup. They only have table syrup.
Well, the thing is though that a lot of people think, oh, Canada, you eat maple syrup all the time. Like I eat maple syrup maybe like a few times a year because I don't eat pancakes that often. But it's just a matter of, oh, if I did want to have pancakes, I would need to have real maple syrup.
Yeah, you can't get the Aunt Jemima. You can't have table syrup. That's it needs to be maple syrup.
It's a lot weirder if you're coming from like Nevada or Arizona because they're like, wait, you're telling me you can't get fresh fried rattlesnake from where you're from?
Actually, you know what is really weird?
It's not bad,
by the way, you guys don't have iced tea. Sweet tea? You have sweet tea here? Am I getting that wrong?
Sweet tea. I've never heard of sweet tea.
Sweet
honestly.
Tea. On the East Coast of the States, it's all sweet tea at McDonald's. Oh, if you ask for an iced tea, they give you ice
at fast food
with black tea.
They call it sweet tea.
Okay.
At regular restaurants, it's just iced tea.
And then you don't have Caesars down here. You only have Bloody Marys.
Well, that's a great switch.
Small differences. Very small differences.
Well, because there's no... You don't have Clamato juice in Canada. It's got clam in it as well. So it's like... it's got a bit of a fishy taste, and you can get really spicy Mott's Clamato and make a Bloody Caesar, which is basically, you know, the same thing as a Bloody Mary, but with Clamato instead of tomato juice.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's pretty good.
Small differences.
Clamato juice and A.
And A, yeah. I miss my Caesars.
Clamato juice, eh?
So, yeah, I think maybe one more song, then we'll go into our little closing bit.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, so last one up, Serious Bedtime. And we're back.
Yeah.
That countdown was pointless. I don't know why I did that. And I'm like, oh, wait, we have to start now. I'm the one who does that. So, let's go back over what you guys are going to be doing in the next couple months.
Yeah, so tonight we're playing at, you gave me the proper pronunciation of that venue.
I I said a tex.
Yeah, I called it takes, but you know.
Is it just tex?
Yeah. Okay, tex. So. Tex. We're playing there tonight. That won't help
you because you don't know how it's spelled.
T-A-I-X, tonight at midnight for Culture Collide Festival, sponsored by Filter Magazine. And we're very, very excited about it. It's going to be a great show tonight, so come out if you can. And then we're also playing at Bootleg at 9:30 on Tuesday. So if you can't make it up tonight, come on Tuesday. And then after that, we're going back home. We're doing a cross Canada tour, and we're really excited about it.
All right. Any closing statements? Anything that you want to leave imprinted on people's minds?
So deep.
It's not. I just like making it sound like it is.
Yeah, if you liked what you heard, you can buy our stuff on iTunes. We're going to have a new record out in the coming year. And we have a new video coming out in the next couple of weeks. And we're very excited about it. It's a Halloween theme. And yeah, hopefully you can check it out online. It'd be really cool.
Nice. You guys have anything to say? Or
likewise.
Yeah. And just
if anybody listening is on Twitter or Facebook, you can find us there.
Or even Instagram. We post a lot of pictures on Instagram. So it's just at the balconies. That's how you follow us.
Yeah, and like we're pretty active on Twitter just because there's a lot of, you know, any day we have a show, we remind people. Anytime there's a new review of a show or like, you know, a video blog we post or anything, like we always post that stuff. So
or anything we think that's really funny and worth sharing, we share on our Twitter.
So bathroom jokes. Trunks. Bathroom jokes. Elephants painting with their trunks.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Cool. It was a ton of fun having you guys over.
Thank you so much for having us.
Great conversation. Hope you do really well in your show. Hope everything goes well.
Thank you.
I think that's about it. Everyone want to say goodbye?
Bye.
Bye.